Welcome, everyone. This is Pam Drennan, and this is the Cosmic Contact Show, coming to you from the RBR Network. We're glad to have you joining us this evening. We're located out of Memphis, Tennessee, and I'm in Redmond, Washington. We are going to have a great show this evening, so be sure and call in, get your questions ready, and we'll see what happens. Anyone can access this show by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/Renford Live or by going to the archives, which is really the on-demand section. And when you get in there, you can just scroll down to you see the show for today. Now, if you don't have a computer, you can call in 347-838-9142. If you want to ask a question, use the same number, 347-838-9142, and Annie, the moderator, will get you in. Well, before I start talking about our wonderful guest tonight, I want to tell you a little bit about the shows that we offer on the network. That's part of it. Of course, my Cosmic Contact show, that's the first one that comes on at 6:30 every Monday, and that's Central Standard Time. On Tuesdays, we have the I'm Well show, that's at 8 p.m., the Night Search show, that's at 9:30 p.m., and then Wednesday's the No Show, and that's at 7 p.m. The Laws of Material Wealth is at 8:30. The Progressive News Weekly is on Thursday at 5:30. Friday is the Searchers Roadmap show, and that's at 1 p.m. Dream Vision 7 show is at 3 p.m. Saturday is Soul Town, the Sound of Music, and that's at 3 p.m. Sunday is the Dream Vision 7 show again, and that's at 3 p.m., and that comes to you out of Boston. Well, we have a wonderful, exciting evening tonight. My guest tonight is Drew Nicholson. He is a spiritual shaman, that's what I call him, and he's been into metaphysics for years, and he's also practices Huna. He is a Humana, a student of the ancient healing and spiritual shamanism of Hawaii, which is called Huna. And his topic tonight is going to be all about relationships and how to have a great relationship and the ingredients that are needed for to make your relationship work, and what works and what doesn't work. Let me bring Drew in. Hi, Drew.
Hello, Pam.
Well, good evening, and glad you're here with us this evening. So, with you know, I didn't tell many people about you or as far as what you you do, and I do know if you would tell people right now, let's start out, will you tell them how to get in touch with you? So we'll get that out of the way. How is the best way to contact you if they have some questions after the show?
Well, if people want to call me, my number is 206-914-0127. My email is drew@drewnicholson.com. And I do some coaching services in addition to being a writer and public speaker. And I'm studying the great deep intricacies of internet marketing.
Okay, now what are you studying? What of internet marketing?
The intricacies, the depth, the details, the how to reach people over the internet and then offer personal growth to them in a way that they actually find interesting and desirable and are willing to part with money for.
All right. Well, that sounds great. That's exactly what people that are out here working their business on the internet, they need this kind of information. Well, anyway, I would like for you to share with us this evening, maybe just really talk about what you think is the main block that people have in relationships and why they work and what why they don't work.
Well, so I'm going to share a little joke with everyone. I thought we were going to talk about fear tonight, and then I looked at the email just for the the call here, and I saw that Pam had sent out that we're going to talk about relationships. And it's interesting that these two actually do fit together. So let's talk a little bit about practical stuff about how a relationship works, and we'll also talk esoterically about the energy that is necessary to have them work. So from the practical, the secret to having a relationship that works is actually quite simple. And that is that both people have to have a shared value of committing and dedicating to making the relationship work through a path of service to each other. And if a relationship does not work out, I'll guarantee you, you can trace it back to somebody not following through on that commitment. And if we look back at the old days when people got married and you didn't get divorced except by death, there was an expectation that this is what was going to occur. And over the years, people use power in relationships to not really fulfill the way they're supposed to do that. And so since people weren't doing what they were supposed to, we've lightened up our morals quite a bit about this. But it's not that ancient that we've changed our morals. It's actually extremely recent. One of my favorite movies is about one of my heroes, Johnny Cash. It's a movie called Walk the Line, and there's a little scene in there that's pointing out the sort of pressure June Carter felt when, you know, this charismatic man, Johnny Cash, is chasing after her. Here, they're in some small town doing a show, and it's not just them, it's other people too. And there's this scene depicting some woman who is judging June Carter for having gotten divorced from her husband because marriage is for life. And this woman went so far as to say, "I'm amazed your parents even talk with you." Now, this is something that occurred in the 1950s, so it's not really that long ago. And if a relationship isn't working out, it's because somebody is not following through on their dedication, their commitment to serve their partner. And if you look in the Bible, there's numerous passages where it's made clear that it's not just a woman serving a man, but the man serving the woman in the relationship. And a lot of people lose sight of that. They think that a husband and wife relationship involves some sort of dominance. And we, in our modern world, we have moved to the world, the way of thinking where we talk about partners and partnerships. And that's fine. But husband and wife is just as strong a partnership as partnership, and then it's more, because it's saying there are certain expectations placed upon each partner. The more masculine is certainly expected to be the protector and provider, and the more feminine is expected to be the nurturer and supporter. But they work together to create not just a relationship and a marriage, but a family, children, a home, everything that goes into what two people do when they enter into a relationship together. And the foundation upon which that rests is that they have a shared value of a commitment to which they are dedicated of serving each other. I know you're wondering something, so I'm going to let Pam say something. You can feel it.
Well, you know, it's so funny. You could feel it. I was watching a program last night and about David back in Bible times, and I'm going, oh gosh, how women were so discounted. I mean, if you weren't under some man, you know, who was going to take care of you, and you know, you were nothing. I mean, women haven't come into their own, I guess, until maybe in the 60s. And I like that word feminism, but there's a time where that we had to say, hey, we're just as important, you know, as men, but you know, in a different way. Anyway, what's your thoughts about that?
Oh, you're exactly right. And so there's an element there that people lose sight of, and that's the element of respect. And I you know, in my studies of internet marketing, I discovered there's a product that's available that apparently has done very well for its creator and very well for its joint venture partners, in that if you promote this product on your website, it tends to make you more money. And it's actually, it's promoted as a product that helps a woman have her man feel like he wants to commit to her. Because, you know, it's always a problem, you know, some, you know, people get together and then, you know, we have this image that the guy never wants to commit and the woman, you know, knows it's the right thing and blah, blah, blah. And so the pitch for this is how to get your boyfriend or your lover or your partner to commit to you for life. And it boils down to teaching women how to communicate with a man in a form where they feel respected in the relationship. And I think a lot of the troubles that we've had in the past is that back, you know, let's go back 100 years, 200 years, it was very hard to respect differences. And when you have a relationship between a man and woman, there are differences. There's differences in expectations. There's differences in strengths and weaknesses. There's differences of opinion. And to assign the power in a relationship to the person who brings in the money is wildly disrespectful of the role that the person who makes the home takes on. A friend of mine who just had a baby, he's two now. She's had this baby for 2 years. And she would really like to not go to work. She wants to be a stay-at-home mom. But then she also acknowledged to me, but being a stay-at-home mom is a lot of work. And it is. Undeniably it is. And I think one of the reasons why we saw the decline of relationships the way we did when the social structures didn't force people to stay together is that basically, if you're a woman and you got another option, somebody's going to be eventually, you're going to wake up someday and say, what the heck am I doing here? I think it's time to get out. A friend of mine used to live in Boise, and no disrespect intended to any particular religion, but he said there were lots of 22-year-old women there with the requisite 2.5 children who were available for dating because they were Mormons. And his experience was that a lot of these women just like woke up one day and decided that the deal that the Mormon church had for women didn't work for them, and they got divorced. Decided, I'm going to go find a different route. This doesn't work for me. That's just the continuation of a longstanding pattern. So if you don't have mutual respect for each other, how can you possibly have a relationship? How can you possibly have communication? How can you possibly make anything work? That respect is this core element beneath being able to have that commitment and dedication to making things work. This is why I say the value. One of the key things about having respect is it's a lot easier to respect someone who has the same values that you have. Now, I'm not saying that respect should be limited to people who have the same values that you have. I'm just saying that it's easier. And so if you have a shared value of this commitment and you're going to make it work and you respect each other, then you're able to communicate with each other from a position of respect, from a place where I understand and I hear what you're saying, and that doesn't work for me. An example of this is something, how many of us have been in a relationship where one partner says something to the other and it just doesn't really come through? You know, like, I'm asking you for something, but it's not direct. Okay? So let's say that I, as the man, would like to have more sex in my relationship. And I know there's women who would like to have more sex in their relationship or more attention from their man or whatever. So I'm just saying, let's say that I want to have more sex in my relationship. And I have the idea that if I go do X, Y, and Z, my wife will want to have sex with me more. But I don't ever actually discuss it with her. For starters, right there, I'm breaking the respect rule because I'm doing something with an expectation that I haven't communicated with her. And then when it doesn't occur, I then am annoyed, and I'm planting this seed of distrust, of disrespect, of not valuing each other, of unfulfilled expectations because I never actually talked about it. So if you have the commitment and the dedication and then you communicate with each other from a respectful perspective where you actually talk to each other about your needs, then it becomes much easier to have the relationship grow and blossom going towards the future. That make sense?
Absolutely, and it does. And, you know, just what you said, though, it is respect. That has got to be balanced out. I don't know. If we aren't taught that, if we don't have that in our upbringing from our parents and seeing how they are taking care of each other and they are respecting each other, I mean, then we don't know. We don't know what we're doing.
That's right. Somebody has to teach us.
That's right.
Well, have you ever been
so
in the experience?
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, that's all right. Have I ever been in the experience?
Of feeling disrespected in a relationship.
Oh, yes.
And then what do you do?
Well, let's see. It could be... Well, he's not going to respect him. I'm not going to, I'm not going to respect him. There's all kinds of things to do. Or to think that I'm just a total victim to life and I only pick men in my life who disrespect me. And but I think, of course, the bottom line is, if you don't respect yourself, how can somebody else respect you?
Perfect. So that gives me the segue I was looking for the esoteric and energetic perspective here, which is fear. So we have a fairly well understanding, I'll bet, in your audience that there's either love or fear. Latin dart, love or fear. And in my little school, we have a pretty basic concept that as you bring energy down from spirit into manifestation, one of the things that blocks manifestation energy is negative emotion in the emotional body. And all negative emotions start from a basis of fear. So if I'm not respecting somebody, then it's because I don't respect myself in some way. If I'm not communicating with somebody about something, it's because I have a fear. Like if I don't tell my wife, this isn't working for me if we don't have sex more than once every 6 months. I've got a fear. Why am I unwilling to discuss that with my partner? When we're talking about your partner, we're talking about the person that you should feel the most love and trust for, where you feel totally safe and you can say anything. And as soon as someone brings judgment into a relationship instead of dealing with it in some way, you're going to be chipping away at the relationship. You're going to be chipping away at the commitments. You're going to be chipping away at the respect. You're chipping away at the love, and you're feeding the fear. And I'm not saying that people should be perfect from the get-go. Like if two people get married when they're the age of 20 and their relationship is perfect for the next 70 years, they are the one in a million couple. No. I mean, people get together to bring up each other's fears and to then work on them together and to grow as a couple. And in fact, dealing with these things together is a big part of what makes it possible for people to grow and grow together. So when you're faced with the opportunity to recognize that you have a fear, and I think this is just a basic esoteric teaching that unfortunately our parents don't teach us, and I'm not sure if our churches really even teach us this, instead of discussing your fear with your pastor or your buddies or somebody else, we have another rule in my school, which is that when you have an issue, you take it to someone who can do something about it. And so if I have a concern about something my partner is going to do, I need to discuss it with my partner. I need to be direct with it, or as direct as I can be. You know, and I understand some women are indirect and some men are very direct, and it can be a little bit intimidating, so there has to be a harmony there. But it really comes down to, are you able to choose to listen to the person you want to make a life with or not? And that's part of the commitment and the dedication to making it work. When my partner says something to me that is difficult for me to hear, I have to choose to respect them, honor my commitment, listen to what they have to say, understand what it is they're trying to tell me, and then do my best to serve them to meet their needs. Otherwise, I'm not doing what I said I would do regarding the commitment. And this is the process. It's actually quite simple in theory, but in practice it's very hard, because it can be so hard to acknowledge our fears and face our fears, or to let go of our preconceived notions of how things should be, our judgments. And especially you see this in a lot of religious-based relationships. People bring in their spiritual or religious judgment into how they think things should be in the relationship. And of all the judgments that I experience, I know those are the ones that are the hardest for me to let go of, to deal with, is when I look at somebody, I say, well, I'm better than you because my spiritual path is better than yours, or where I'm at on my path is better than yours, or some other such, you know, insanely nutty perspective on how life, the universe, and the world works. So, again, these are things that when people face them with their partners from a position of love and trust, respect and commitment, they might have some difficult times. They might have to work out a strategy for how they're going to negotiate meeting their needs with each other. But they have to do that. And I say this from the perspective of having actually read some Christian marriage counseling books. And the ones I've read are very clear that this is the way you do it in the Christian faith. I don't know what they would say in other faiths, but from an energetic perspective, in my school where I study energy and spirituality, this lines up in that you make choices that come from a place of love and your heart, and a willingness to be grateful that you've got this other person willing to put up with you and actually wanting to put up with you for the amazing joy and growth that's possible together. And when you connect with that and acknowledge that, then you're in a place of strength where you can actually get through the tough times together, dealing with those things that will ultimately help you both grow as people, as spiritual beings, and as a couple. How about that?
Well,
I have a question.
I totally agree, and I do have a question about that. But just to, again, the spiritual connection, I think, is so important. And if you're not like real spiritual or whatever, you think it's not important, so you can be with anybody, you know, whatever, and you've connected on a physical level, but you're not on a spiritual level, and it's okay for a while, and then it doesn't start working out like you want it to on the physical level, and you don't have the spiritual part of it for a backup, you know, where you can communicate and work with each other there. I mean, you know, when I started learning how to muscle test, and I started learning from Dr. David Hawkins' book, Power versus Force, about how to calibrate, how to see what level of calibration people are. And I realized that when I would have clients would come in and I'd say, let me calibrate you and your husband or your boyfriend, and we'd be talking, and they'd say, okay, but the ones that calibrated the same, it worked. They'd been together, they're working things out, but when one is in a different, say one's a 400 and other's a 500, well, there's too much difference there, you know, even in their calibration. I mean, it's there in our energy field, and we don't even really know it, you know, but it is there in our consciousness. That's what we're calibrating, is how conscious this person is, how awake we are, and we need to be awake on the same conscious level. fondly.
Absolutely. We, so many schools speak of spiritual work, and other schools speak of consciousness and raising consciousness, and they're one and the same. You know, and consciousness isn't some bizarre, esoteric, fancy, unattainable thing like, like some people, get attached to the idea of enlightenment, whatever that is. And it's something complicated, it's unattainable, something you have to go meditate in a cave for 20 years for, or be one of the anointed ones, or you just have to be, the Buddha or Christ that comes along every 1,000 years. And it's getting a little, nutty. Raising your consciousness is simply raising your awareness of your choices. And so when, if you're going to test people's consciousness level, and you've got a person who is willing to be very flexible about owning and acknowledging the choices they make and how they make them. So someone who's at a higher level of consciousness and someone who just plain isn't, there's going to be an issue. Now, if they both have the shared value and the commitment to grow together, then the relationship can work. And this is where I get to throw in the caveat that I'm speaking this from the perspective of someone who's divorced and has had, two engagements that didn't work out and a number of other girlfriends. And a month ago, my most recent girlfriend moved out of the house. So I'm definitely not throwing stones at anybody. I'm just going to say that. If you look at beings as spiritual beings, we have spiritual bodies, mental bodies, emotional bodies, and physical bodies. And I've talked about this before. All I'm going to say is there has to be a degree of compatibility in all the bodies. And even if you have a compatibility at the spiritual level but not at the mental level, then there's going to be an issue. Now, at the mental and emotional levels, if both partners are willing to make changes in how they operate mentally and emotionally, they can still make the relationship work. I was discussing this with my teacher, and I'm like, well, what about, couples where they make a baby and then they stay together for 50 years? And he's like, well, and when it happens between two devout Christians, he says, well, then, okay, if they have the same spiritual path, they will find a way to make it work. They have support structures. They do all these things together to work their stuff out and grow together. So in our society, fewer and fewer people are finding themselves in a social structure where there's a lot of support to hold them together. And part of that's because in the old days, instead of having support to hold them together, it was a shame to keep them from splitting apart, which, people naturally tend to move away from pain. And if your experience of something is only pain, then you tend to stop. Like, I'm not going to keep sticking my hand into the campfire to see if it's hot.
Right.
It doesn't take me more than one time to know, okay, that doesn't work. So if you have two people who are at the same level of consciousness, they're spiritually compatible, right away, it's much easier for them to be together. They can still have incompatibilities down below, but once they have that spiritual compatibility, then they go a long way. And again, this is why I'm going to go back again. I think ultimately the master secret for most people is that they have a shared value. In my school, we talk about beliefs and values. And beliefs are more powerful than values. Beliefs also reside more at the spiritual body, and values reside more in the mental body. And you can change both your beliefs and your values. But the higher you go up, the less conscious they become. People tend to be pretty much unconscious of what is a belief and barely conscious of what a value is. But a value is how you spend your time, and a belief is the way you perceive or interpret what's going on in the world. So if you have the value that I will commit and dedicate in a relationship with respect and love and communication to making it work no matter what, then you will automatically spend time doing that, even if your beliefs don't fully support it. Now, if you have a belief that it's impossible for two people to have a long-lasting relationship, you probably will not have the value. So you get right away that if you have the value, it implies that you have beliefs that support it. But if you have beliefs, you might not have the value. And so this is why I say, and I'm inclined to say, that the value itself is the master key, because values, like I said, they determine how you spend your time, how you're going to choose to invest your energy, your attention, your effort. And if you don't have the value of investing in your relationship, then it's going to be difficult. So you might even have the belief in the absolute fairy tale romance, Prince Charming wakes up the princess and they live happily ever after, and that's the way it's supposed to be. But if you don't have the value that you're going to invest time in making the relationship continue to work for the next 70 years, then it's not going to happen.
Okay, I understand that. I got that. That's good. Which I think the value and belief, I've never in that way heard anyone explain it, but that is wonderful. I mean, it really makes total sense. We have
like
a
simple.
Caller. I do too.
We do? Sweet.
Yeah, we have a caller. Let's bring Trevor in. He would like to ask you a question. Hold on. Hi, Trevor.
Hey, Pam.
So what's your question for Drew this evening?
Hi, Drew.
Hey, Trevor.
I guess I'm curious about just balancing, you know, having the value of wanting to put the effort into making something work with just taking time to work on yourself, or having periods where you feel more hermit-like. Just with me, just being with family stuff, with a new job, and just my own spiritual team. Lately, I just felt more from just my boyfriend, but just a lot of people in general, which I don't know if cancer part of that, maybe just being in my shell at times, but it can be challenging just with being in a relationship as well, which is kind of new for me. Just curious about spiritual things. Wouldn't really consider himself to be really spiritual, but just in the way that he, you know, open-minded, being artistic, all these things he has. But sometimes there's a gap between, like, the stuff that I'm doing, how I'm spending my time with my own seeking, and then being around him, where it's just, I don't think I can really explain all these things that I'm doing. And just kind of, there's a little bit of a separation, I guess, because of that. And I don't want to be pressuring someone to become more spiritual for me. I don't know. It's just, it's challenging.
This is a fabulous question, Trevor. And you said boyfriend, so I'm guessing that you're gay, which makes it even better. So this is fantastic. I love these. So here's the first rule. Always seek simplicity. Okay, and because that moves you automatically closer to spirit, and that's where the power is. Okay, so you basically got a two-parter question here, and your first is, I have strategies for how I deal with my stuff in my life, and there are times when I want to go in the cave, and there's times when I want to interact, and this is one of the most misunderstood aspects of personality typing. Carl Jung started this. His daughter-in-law kept it going. And, you know, there's a thing called the Myers-Briggs Types Indicator, which so many people have heard of, or you can find stuff like this in the Enneagram. I mean, there's various management consultants who like to do typing. Very simple. People have a tendency to be extroverted. People have a tendency to be introverted. And somehow somebody got the idea in the development of personality type theory that somebody is one of these things, and that is what they are. And they don't even teach this in the MBTI. They teach it as a continuum. People are somewhere on the continuum between being extroverted and introverted. And to be an extrovert means you recharge by being with other people. To be an introvert means you recharge by being by yourself. Now, another aspect of this that people leave out is that in not all contexts are you going to be the same place on that continuum of extroverted and introverted. You could have a situation at work where you need to face something head on and be an extrovert and have a straight up direct conversation with somebody at work about something that is a point of conflict, and be in a relationship with a person and have a point of conflict where you just can't talk about it because the stakes are too high, your fears are up, whatever it is, you know, whatever your mental strategy is, I'm not, you know, judging. And I don't know, but you need to say, stop. My ex and I had a word, we had a safe word. Our safe word when we have conversations was Jupiter, you know. Things are a little too intense. We need to break it off, and we both need to go to separate corners. So the first aspect of that is that this isn't about spirituality. That's just about what your mental strategy is for how you deal with things. And then you need to have the commitment and the love and the respect to say, here's what I need from you now. Can you do this for me? So if you're having an intense conversation and it's like too much for you and you're overloaded, you need to say, hey, honey, sweetie, baby, whatever. It's too much. I need to go to my room, sit down, sort out my thoughts, because otherwise this is going to spiral out of control and we're just going to have a big fight. And I love and respect you and I want this to work out. And this is what I need to be able to honor you with what I'm thinking about what you're saying to me now. And if you've got a good partner, your partner says, okay. They might also say something like, well, I feel really pissed off that you need time to go talk to yourself. And you say, well, I'm sorry about that. That's the way I work right now. And you deal with it, you know, because I guarantee you, you know, you just say to them, I know. And I promise you, when you tell me what your needs are, I will honor and respect them as best I can as well. Very simple stuff. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, on the spiritual side, it's even simpler. I mean, this again, people get all wrapped up in what spirituality is. It's like, oh, I've got this incredibly dogmatic set of rules I follow, and that means I'm spiritual. No. Spirituality is so much simpler. Spirituality is what uplifts you. What brings you joy, fulfillment, happiness, a sense of meaning and contribution in your life, purpose. Why am I here and I feel like I'm fulfilling that? And I guarantee you there are not any two people on the planet for whom that is the same.
Mm-hmm.
It just isn't. So there's only one thing you can do about somebody's spiritual beliefs, and that is respect them.
Mm-hmm.
And so someone who absolutely has no spiritual beliefs and believes or even vehemently denies the existence of spirit is probably not going to be able to work well with someone who's very spiritual. They're not able to respect each other's beliefs, and beliefs live in the realm of spirit. So those two people are not going to get together. Now, on the other hand, if you respect each other enough to say, I want you to be who you are. And you say that to each other. And I believe we can be together loving and respecting each other as who we are. And in fact, I think it will go best if we do that. Then you don't have to care at all what they do to connect with spirit. For some people, connecting with spirit is playing guitar, doing photography, gardening, cooking. It can be cleaning the house. And for other people like me, I go to Hawaii twice a year for 2 weeks, and I study spirituality with my teachers there. And then I come home and I practice it. It's whatever it is for you, and you just respect it. And in a relationship, as you relate with each other, and you get, if you get wrapped up in the idea, are we growing together spiritually? You're asking the wrong question. The question is, are we both growing spiritually? Because that is a value and a belief that we have, that these are things that are important. And do we love, respect, and support each other in doing so? And by doing so, you strengthen the bond together. To have any other perspective is to be judging someone else's spiritual path. And since every person's spiritual path is absolutely unique, anything that is any sort of a comparison or judgment or attempt to identify difference other than, well, this is the way they do it and this is the way I do it, and that's fine. You know, if you're not like that, you're just going to invite trouble, and that's your stuff, and then that's how you get to work on it and let it go, and then you're both growing together spiritually. It's like going into the financial markets to make money. If you go into the financial markets to make money, there's an old rule among financial traders. You are not going to make money. But if you enjoy it, you're having fun, you're playing a fun game, if you have beliefs that you enjoy doing it, then that's how you make money. So you enjoy the process of being on your individual spiritual paths, but together. You know, you're cohabitating, you see each other every day, or it could be long distance, it doesn't matter. But you're talking to each other about whatever you want to talk about and feeling good about the conversation. Or not. I mean, whatever everybody's strategy is, you have to be mentally compatible where your strategies are enough different that you have something to talk about. Spiritually, you're compatible because you are on sufficiently similar spiritual paths that you can respect each other without too much difficulty. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Awesome. That was a great question.
Awesome. Yeah. That was great. And, you know, I love everything you're sharing, Drew. And, you know, as I listen, I'm seeing, too, in a relationship, it's all about communicating more than anything and being aware that when you're not communicating, you know, and how do you get back there? And I know that we grow the most when we are in a relationship thing. And that's, I assume, one reason why maybe the universe has us connect up with people so we can work on ourselves.
Carl Jung would say that's true.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I do know that. But it would be nice if it would really be easy all the time, but then we would not be growing, you know, and looking at our stuff, because everybody is a mirror that's in front of you, reflecting back our goodness or our ugliness, right?
Oh, there's only goodness.
Yeah. Right, you're right. It's all good, honey. You got it. It is all good. It's there for our good. Absolutely.
I didn't even choke when I said that.
Uh-huh.
I've had my moments where I say things about my ex while I'm doing something around the house. I'm like, rah, rah, rah. I'm like, she's a wonderful, loving person.
I know. And you know what? When you do have that love connection with someone, they are wonderful and everything. And, you know, but if it doesn't work, you have to let it go. I definitely don't want to be with someone who doesn't really want to be with me. And that never works. Stay in relationships. I know when I was married before for like 19 years, and after 10 years I kept saying, I'm not happy, I want a divorce. But he didn't feel that way, so he felt that we should stay married. Of course, we have kids and this and that. But I feel like that if I could have been financially, you know, better enough to take care of me and my children, I would have really been out of there. And, of course, we stay for a long reason, but sometimes we stay a lot longer than we really need to, you know. We're doing more damage than we are good.
Yeah, well, we all have reasons for staying in relationships. I'll admit, quite honestly, you know, I knew there were issues with my girlfriend, and I really like her, and it's very frustrating because we are on the same spiritual path to a rather deep degree. And physically, we get along really, really well, but mentally and emotionally, we're not as compatible. So, one, I've got the conflict that this is really great, except when it's not. And then two, I'll be straight up honest. I'm tired of other people judging the way I have my relationships. And now, if somebody says to me again, why do you date women of, you know, whatever quality that they might have stuff about, I'll just say, well, one, it's not really your business. And two, you've seen my most recent girlfriend and that didn't work out. So I think all these things that you know, that people want to pick on as, you know, something that they think is important for me in a relationship is like, okay, that's you. You don't really have a place to be telling me that. And I'm stuck with this one and I let her be the one who ended it because I wanted to be able to say that. I wanted to be able to just be totally, totally clear next time it comes up. And with the people, I'm either totally done with it and they won't bring it up, or if they do bring it up because they got so much stuff about it, I'll just be okay with saying it's really not your place to talk to me about that, which is a really great place of freedom. So I got to, you know, honor my commitment to, I said I want to be with you and let's make it work. And I get the side benefit that someone gives me shit, I go, nah, 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 nah.
I know.
Because I'm a petty guy. Sometimes it's fun. Do we have any more callers? Or is it just Trevor?
You know, that was just Trevor. I was going to see if Annie had a question. And I wish she would get on. Let me see what she said. Hi, Annie.
Hey, honey. How are you?
Great. Do you have a question?
I am listening.
For Drew tonight regarding maybe your relationship with your... something you could work out with your husband?
Well, I mean, we have this pattern. I've been married May 12th, 30 years to the same person. And we dated 5. And so 35 years we've been together. And but we kind of go through this pattern of like, I call it the 4 times a year, because I'll talk to Pam. I'll say, well, we're going through the 4, that time of year, you know. And it's just where, like, I guess it's kind of like, I don't really know how to describe it. It's just like, and I don't want to say the 7-year itch, because it's not really, I mean, after this long, you really don't want to go start over anywhere, at least I don't, nor does my husband, or he says he don't, but it's just like where you just kind of get to where you're not willing to work. It doesn't last long. I mean, it's like a week or 2 or 3 days. I do notice it keeps getting shorter. It used to be weeks or months, you know, where you get the silent treatment, because that's what my husband does. He's come a long ways, but he's not a good communicator because from his childhood or whatever. But anyway, so we have those few times a year. Do you have an idea what I'm talking about? It's just always at
this
the
is great.
Of the year.
This is
and
a great
then,
question. I love
yeah.
questions like this. So
yes,
and I'm going to go all the way up to energy here. Energy moves.
Yeah.
That's what it does. Energy doesn't sit around. It doesn't like to sit. It likes to move. So here's what's going on here. You've got, and you said it yourself, you've got basically a cycle and a rhythm in your relationship. 4 times a year. That sounds awesome. Because I'm going to say that if he's going through this point 4 times a year where he's giving you the silent treatment, I hope that 4 times a year he's also going through a I can't keep my hands off of you and I'm feeling completely lost if I'm not next to you treatment. Okay. So here's what's happening. Masculine, feminine, and hopefully Trevor's still on the line. So here's this, because I love to be able to explain this to gay couples because they don't get it. If you got two men or two women in a relationship, they don't understand it as well. But we all have masculine and feminine within us, and in various contexts, we take charge as masculine, or we are receptive and latent potential as feminine. And it doesn't matter whether you've got a penis or a vagina, you've got both energies within you. So here's what's going on, is you've got this constant interplay of the masculine and feminine energy. And sometimes the masculine gets tired and can't keep driving. It needs to take a break. And then other times, after it's had the break, the masculine energy gets really charged up. And this is the fundamental aspect of the polarity between the masculine and feminine. When a man ejaculates, he needs to take a break afterwards. There's very few men who can keep going after doing that. Okay? So it's like, you know, you have a really strenuous muscular workout. You need to take a break and you need to rest. And so the key is to become conscious of the pattern and then to choose how you want to direct the energy. And so what I would say is that when your husband is being less affectionate, you can take charge by asking him what's going on, letting him know you respect him and love him. And instead of thinking in terms of your needs, you become the masculine and you start talking to him about his, and you let him know, I respect you. Now, he might not be open to communication. He might not want to talk. But you can take charge. You know, and most men are okay with a woman taking charge and dragging him into the bedroom. Just saying. Maybe not. I don't know if that's what's appropriate here. But there's some way in which he's retreating into his cave. And maybe that's what he needs. And you just need to get him to say it. I need to take some time for myself. I mean, how many women have I heard that from? All of them. So notice when he is doing things that you would want to do. If things were intense or not intense, just what, you know, step out of the way you're perceiving these situations and try to put yourself into his perspective. Now, this, by the way, is a very good rule anytime anybody is having a difficulty with somebody else, which is to do their best to understand what's going on for the other person. What is it like to be that person right now? What is going on? And what do I need in this situation? And then you go and test it by talking about it and saying, do you need this? Do you need that? And you might not want to be as direct. You might want to still be very feminine, very indirect, very supportive. It depends. You've got to gauge it and work it out and get an idea of what's really going on there and what works. But this is awesome. You've got a pattern of energy there, and you're conscious of the pattern of energy. And so now that you've become conscious and aware of the pattern, it's your opportunity to do something with it that is productive and useful by giving it some direction instead of letting it simply occur on its own. Because the two of you are creating this together.
Because I kind of just like, take it offensively and just say, well, it's just that time of the year. Blah, blah, blah. I don't really look at it like you're saying. You know what I'm saying? I'm just
deal
with
and
it.
What
this
happens
too
to a,
shall pass. So that's why it keeps on reoccurring.
What happens to a man when his attitude is, well, it's just that time of the month? How well does that go over?
Yeah. Not well.
I mean, not well. You know, I mean, and, you know, we all, we all have these cycles and rhythms going on within us all the time.
Well,
you know,
I always
they're emotional,
say that.
They're mental, they're spiritual.
This time of the month. I said, you're just going through. And I used to always joke and say, you know, I have 1 week a month, and my husband has 3 weeks a month.
Okay. No, that's great. That's great. So here's your challenge. Here's the task I'm going to give you is for you to get him to own it.
Now,
how
am I going to do that?
Well, I had one girlfriend who would have very unpleasant menstrual cycles, and you know, more than once I was we'd be having some intense moment, and I'd say, "Sweetie, I think we're getting close," and she goes, "Oh, you're right. Sorry about that." And then she just goes on with whatever she's doing, right? You know, she's in her hormones. You know, what's she going to do? There's things you can do about that, but, you know. The first step is to be conscious. So if you're telling him,
right,
"Baby, I think it's your time of the month," let me ask you, are you saying it from a position of being supportive or of wheedling him or teasing him or testing him? And so get clear with your intention. This is the masculine energy. Okay, the masculine energy is intention, clarity of mind, clarity of thought. Do you have, you know, and let's go back even to the first principle. You're making the commitment and you're dedicated to making this relationship be one that grows. So these are opportunities to grow for both of you. So become the masculine with a clarity of intention and thought that you want to grow together from this. And there's an energy there that is being not direct, not assertive, it's being not masculine. So that means it's your turn to jump in with an appropriate level of masculine direction to say, "Sweetie, you're doing that thing you do. And you do it in a way where you go around his defenses. Because if you say it in a way that brings up his fears about who he is as a person, about whether he's being a man, about whether you respect him, whether you about love him, whether he has to worry about losing something, you know, anything that would be a fear, you're not going to get through anywhere. Because once you bring up the fear, then you've got to deal with the fear. So you've got to make sure you're coming from a very clear and loving from your heart place where it's like, "Honey, what's going on for you? Honey, I care about you. How are you feeling?" And he might be like me, someone who has difficulty acknowledging his feelings. And so you just say, "Well, what are you thinking right now? What's, you know, just," and very patiently get him to open up. And it might not happen the first time, because if this is a pattern that's been going on for years.
For years,
you're going
yeah.
to have to. You're going to have to let him develop trust that he can discuss with you whatever it is that's going on. Now, think about if you were in his shoes and there's something going on, are you going to automatically trust somebody who's coming in like a bull in a china shop and saying, "What the is your problem? You know, tell me now so we can deal with it directly." I know when my ex-wife used to want to tell me about her problems at the end of the day, she didn't want me to fix them. She just wanted me to listen.
Right.
So you've got to, you know, look at this. I mean, this is what it sounds like. I could be wrong. You know, it's never happened before, but it could always happen. You know. I'm sorry. I had to say that.
Yeah.
Take charge of the energy. And use the, you know, and do your best, knowing him well, as you do, to gauge how assertive to be and how gentle to be. Remembering that one of the ultimate expressions of masculinity is to be strong enough to be gentle.
Okay.
And so that's what, I mean, so you get him to open up, then you can get him to own it, and then you can work on it together.
Okay, that makes sense. Because usually what we do is we just give each other the silent treatment. I mean, we still talk during the day, but it it's like short and sweet and whatever. Mm-hmm. And like I say, it used to be weeks and weeks and weeks. Now it's down to 2 or 3 days. You know, then we get back, because I do say, you know, it's that time of the year, you know, and that kind of jars his memory, you know, that's how I feel about it. But I really just never, I don't know, because Pam always says, well, are you start cleaning on it, you know, and stuff like that. And it's like, and I love it when she says that, because I'm so wrapped up in being angry because I'm in the situation, you know.
Right.
Not like raging angry, but sometimes raging angry. But you know what I'm saying? So I don't think about it. So that's good.
Right. So you,
that's good. I never really thought about it that way.
Yeah, you've got to the place where you're able to be not attached to the situation, which is excellent. I mean, you had to get there first. There's no way you'd be able to have an open and honest discussion if you had an attachment to whatever was going on for you. You know,
right.
So you've taken the necessary first step, which is you've let go of that it's about you, and then you can actually have an honest discussion with the other person, which is just the next step. And I, maybe my beliefs are quaint, but I think, you know, when people get together and they have passion, there should be some sex involved. I view this as an opportunity that you build charge and polarity that leads to productive action that is enjoyable and pleasurable for both parties in the arrangement, whatever that is. Maybe you go fishing.
And that is, yeah, and that is, you know, something that I always hold out on, you know, during that time too. So maybe I'll try it, like you said, try it in a, try to be different, you know,
just
take charge and
it's a fun game
stop
where
it right
you get
when
to experiment,
starts, you know?
Yeah, you
right.
get to try different things, be aware of what's going on, and raise the consciousness for both of you.
Right.
It's a growth opportunity.
Yeah. Well, how awesome. Okay. Yeah, 35 years. I mean, our friends, we laugh about it. Our friends all had bets we wouldn't make it a year. And we've made it all this time. Literally.
Good job.
Never separated or anything. I mean, talked about it several times. Just never did it.
Well, great job.
Yeah, thank you.
I think it is a great job, and it is takes something all the time working on a relationship that you've been in one for a long time to keep the newness there, to keep, you know, each other interested and active and happy and communicating and all the things. Well, Drew, what a great talk this afternoon. I appreciate you so much. I love everything you shared. And I definitely want to get you back on again really soon. You've got a great way for us, new ways to understand regarding relationships. And I'm happy. I'm glad we had this time today. And
thank you for inviting me.
I know, it's already been an hour, and it went so fast. And,
I know, I didn't realize that.
Thank you for
Annie. Tell us how to get in touch with you, Drew.
My phone number again is 206-914-0127, and my email is drew@drewnicholson.com. And if you call and you don't leave a message, then I probably won't get back to you, because I usually don't answer the phone if it's not a number that I recognize. I need to get a business number, which I'll get eventually.
Right. I understand that.
So it's good for them to just talk to email you, and then you can set up something with them.
Sure.
Okay. Well, you have any more words of wisdom before we close up this evening?
You know, I think the most important thing that I've learned is just to recognize that everybody is on their own path. and it's different. And what they experience is what they experience, and what you experience is what you experience, and just respect that.
Just respect that, right. And try not to, you know, to fix them, change them, make them be different or whatever you think that they need. And, yeah. All right, everybody. Good luck out there with that.
Thank you.
Thank yes. you.
Have an awesome week.
Yes.
Okay.
Good evening.
We are. Good evening.